miles of road, and
that's what it'll take.
So you're talking about, I mean, our business is going to have to be moved, or buildings moved, or?
Yes, there's historical structures, there's businesses, there's residences. I'm sorry.
Okay, I was going to ask, does a lot of that have to do with acquisition of property?
About $15 million. So there's still a lot of construction.
Is there any land for sale along that road right now? some old sites that a guy might pick up, oversight on someone's part.
Yeah, yes, there is all of that.
So it is in the where is that ranking in your planning as far as 6-year plan of the southern region?
It ranks very high. Our challenge is going to be how to figure out how to fund it. Our region doesn't get $70 million a year to do its job. It gets more like $13 million a year. And that's to do, I mean, Ketchikan's obviously not our only obligation to look after, and so we have to figure out how to fit that kind of a project in. So it is a high priority, and we are in the final stages of the environmental impact statement. And we're trying to accelerate this project, so we're concurrently doing as much of the design work as we can and still stay current with our federal requirements. And so we figure that I think it's 1995, that we'll be ready for construction.
Hey, do you have any other projects southeast here don't rank that high?
Yeah, they don't necessarily rank that higher. They may, but they're not of that magnitude, that difficult to deal with. But things on the Haines Highway, which is probably similar to some of Senator Schultz's roads, that low volume but very important roads, we have a project underway to upgrade that, and it's probably on the order of $20 million at this point.
Are you widening that?
It'll be widened and straightened, right? Virtually every curve in that road, and the last 20 miles of it is substandard.
So from the border coming on into Haines.
Right. From the border toward Haines, and right now our main focus is from around the border area. So that's another major project. We have just led a major project, a 14-mile project to reconstruct the road in Petersburg. And there's one upcoming in Wrangell that'll be ready for next year. It's about a $5 or $6 million job. That'll get most of our small towns like that, and even some of the villages are getting to where we're kind of catching up on those rural type needs, I believe.
I never really gave that much thought. Wrangell, for example, those roads, what you say is a little 2-mile road or 5-mile road, well, they're eligible for federal funding, aren't they?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
Most of those roads are. They interconnect your modes of transportation, like from the airport to the ferry terminal, the town to the airport, or town to the ferry terminal, or other major the industries that occur in those communities.
Well, I wasn't thinking of the little small roads. You know, I mean, I'm out here on Egan Drive and all that. I can see. I just wasn't thinking in terms of these little 2-mile roads.
Okay, I guess a question I do want to ask is, in 1990, legislative intent was passed requesting a complete listing of all deferred maintenance projects. To my understanding, Southeast has one together. Do the other regions have one together that were put Northern Region, South Central Region, as far as deferred maintenance projects?
Mr. Chairman, I gave a list today of what was what the funds appropriated last session were going to be used for, are being used for.
On deferred maintenance?
Yes.
But the language refers to total need, total projects, total potential deferred projects like South Central or Southeast. Complete listing.
We didn't know that was what you wanted.
No, it's just in the legislative intent language back in 1990.
I understand. I didn't know from your letter that was what you wanted to do.
Oh, it wasn't.
Okay.
But we don't have a list.
The question is, was that list ever been put together for other regions?
I can have your list.
Okay. Do you have like a general list, and then you bring forward a list that you gave us like today of what you're going to anticipate for the next construction season?
Yes, we do. For each of the three districts in Northern Region, we have a list that we work off of, and in fact, the projects on, not all of them, but many of the projects on that list came off of that. There were more projects listed than there were funds available to move forward with. We have those lists, and I can forward them to you.
How about the Central Region? Same?
Kit?
We'd like.
Oh, they have them. Okay. Two brothers. Okay. We let her off the hook early for that. Is there, John, do you have anything else you want to bring for the committee?
I don't know. I guess I could just take a minute here. I'll just run through some things that just occurred to me here. In the Southeast region, like the other region, we have three primary functions that we carry out. One of them's planning, one of them's design and construction, and one of them's maintenance. And in the planning area, I know there's been a lot of talk here about the local involvement and things. And in the Southeast region, we think we do a pretty good job of it, but there's only two people in the region that are effectively working on that. One of them is myself and my chief of planning. Those are the only people that we have available to interact with the local communities in trying to get an idea what the needs are in these places and try to figure out how to address them. We're shortchanging the public by that process. It affects us. There's, for a relatively small amount of effort there, that translates and it gets programmed in and has major effect as to what projects you end up building and how those things are scoped out. And I guess I would leave you with the with my impression that we're shortchanging that planning process, and we're affecting in major ways the construction, design and construction projects later on that are many, many magnitudes more involved and complicated. So that's one point. In the design and the construction area, I think in our region we feel really good about the systems that we've developed to try to get a handle on costs and on schedules and assigning our resources. I feel that it's going to make it a lot easier, and it is making us a lot easier for us to when we tell you something shows up in our six-year plan, you'll have pretty good confidence that job's going to get out like we say it is. Not perfect. You always run into problems. But in general, I feel really good about that process. It's not been without a lot of pain in the unit. There's been a lot of organizational changes, and those have not set well with the staff. But I feel that it gives us a lot of flexibility. We can take on additional work. We can cut back. And we're doing all this work with less staff than we've ever had. And so I feel really good about that, and I just share that with you. In the maintenance and operations area, of course, this winter has been pretty good to us, except in two areas, in Haines and Skagway. And we've been hit just like everybody else, but we've been able to absorb that within the region. But I think that the two areas that are the focus areas for me, one of them is the Klondike Highway. We're putting in an incredible amount of resources, people and equipment into 15 miles of road to keep that road open year-round so that a very major economic interest can use that road as well as the public. So that is a major area of emphasis to me. The other one is on Prince of Wales Island. We have a very small staff there. In the last 15 years, we've taken on an additional 90 miles of new roads under our responsibility. People say that we haven't really been expanding the road system. Well, I can tell you, in Prince of Wales Island, it's expanding at the rate of 3 to 5 miles a year. And our resources down there are stretched to try to keep up with that. And it's going to continue for another probably, I can see another 50 miles or 80 miles of additional responsibility to try to tie that island together. So those are just some little things that I share with the committee since you made that opportunity available. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much. The issue on your design and construction, are you, in your engineering, are you doing the majority of that in-house, or do you put some up for bid, or how do you work that?
Most of that work in the past has been in-house. We've always used probably 25% consultants. I'm not sure. That number varies a little bit. But as this program that we're all talking about is increasing, then the our consultant percentage, we're doing all of that work basically with additional, with consultants. We're not bringing on new people to do that work. I can't give you an exact percentage, but it's substantial.
Well, I do know that I hear it, and Senator Schultz hears it, and many of us hear it, that more miles come into the system, fewer people could do it on the thing, and equipment sometimes is X-rated when it gets on further out and stuff like that. So with it all, and the demands of the public have increased their expectation level. And in my understanding, I know when I moved to the homestead I live on in Wasilla in 72, it seemed like if, you know, after the third day, if someone didn't get a plow through there, you kind of got a little concerned about it. And now it seems like after about 3 hours, someone's calling on the phone if someone's not there. So I understand some of the things you all have to go through, and certainly don't understand it all, but coming together and bringing these services to the public, what the public expectation of the reality of what we can do, it's a pretty reasonable job. One thing I do want to just make a point of and put a plug in for it is, and I will see the process myself, but there may be something to it in the fact that I do have a constituent in Wasilla that has put together a design for a freeze, it's my understanding it's a freeze-dried sand process, and which does not use salt. And of course, one of the concerns in using salt, it does create melting and stuff. It does raise havoc with automobiles. The use, and of course, the other thing that it does during the winter months does bring moose out to the road, because they do come out to get the salt, and creates a few accidents for the public and safety, and it usually results in the demise of the moose in the process. So he is making arrangements to make this presentation to DOT sometime in the future. It was developed through a science and tech grant, I believe, of a couple hundred thousand. And they were chosen to go to the national demonstration of new techniques in Austin, Texas, I believe it is, to show this demonstration on how it can be used. So there may be something in the future how this will work in. And it's my understanding that, John, has there been a demonstration project or something in the Fairbanks area or at the university or something with that project? Are you aware of it at all?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of anything recent. I know here a while back we tried a heated sand process with a burner on the truck, a drum in Fairbanks. It created more ice fog and created more hazard than it did good.
Okay.
As far as the freeze-dried, now I've heard about that somewhere. I'm not sure if it's anything you're talking about or not. But right now we are looking again in Fairbanks at a multitude of alternatives to putting salt with the sand. And you know, I haven't come up with anything real good yet.
What about the ash? What about the ash? We're not in Telecom anymore.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
we are.
Oh, fair.
Okay. What about the ash from down at Usabelli? I've heard that that's good for traction, and it doesn't cause any hazardous problems.
Everything that I've heard about that has been just the contrary. That it creates a mess.
Oh, really?
It's dirty, that it creates air pollution, that it clogs up storm drains. I do know that in Fairbanks, you know, with the steam plant for the city and the utilities and the University of Alaska's utility plant and whatnot, there is available ash. It has been tried in the past, and it has not been something that anybody wanted to continue with.
Okay. I was just wondering, maybe not in the urban areas, but what about like the long stretches of road? But you're saying that the problem has been that it is creates a dust and it's, you know, all that.
Well, Senator, I think mostly it's been used in the urban area of Fairbanks before. So how it may work out in the more rural areas, I'm not certain. One of the reasons that we use salt with our sand piles, one of the reasons is to keep the pile from freezing.
Sure.
If there was a way to put the sand down, perhaps the freeze-dry process, or if you had dried sand that you could then keep in a shed, then for a lot of what we use in the interior, you wouldn't need a chemical.
Is the part of using the salt because it also melts the ice and the etc. on the road? Is that part of it too?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct, and that's one of the questions that I have about freeze-dried process or whatever. Although I'm not, don't take this as negative, because I would dearly love not to use salt if there was some way to do that. There is probably no one that likes to keep their vehicles nicer than I do. The proper way to use salt or chemical is not to try to go out and melt your ice off the road after it forms. It's too late. The proper way to do it is to get it down as the storm is in progress and as the temperatures are higher, closer to freezing, and create what they call a brine sandwich that keeps the snow from packing. If you look behind the tires, as long as it's kicking up a little bit, it's an indication that things are okay. You've got enough salt in it. Temperatures are right. As you move to a colder temperature after the storm, you need to get that stuff off of there. If you do it that way, it takes a very little bit of salt, as opposed to try to come back later and melt off an inch of ice pack on a road. That takes inordinate amount of chemical to do that. But that is correct. That is one of the main purposes, especially in your areas where your temperatures are ranging between 20 and 35 degrees.
One other quick question, and I can't remember. 2 or 3 years ago, we were talking about some research that was being done. We were talking about the amount of brush cutting, and oftentimes we really get behind in that, and we get some areas that have, you know, trees that are going up 15, 20 feet high. And there was some experimentation and with the Alaska Railroad was doing it, and I was wondering if DOT, I thought, was doing it also, maybe the university, putting some chemical out to, I don't know, to kill or to stunt the growth of or whatever, some of the poplars or some of the trees that are growing in the area or along the right-of-ways.
Senator Schultz, we have, for the first time in this department, in 15 years of this department's efforts, we've applied herbicides to roadways in Petersburg and on a Prince of Wales Island to control vegetation. And it was an incredible process to go through to get these approvals, but we did it, and we're planning to expand that program this year. We did it on a very limited basis. We are using it as one of the control methods, in addition to brushing with a mechanical equipment or other things. So, and we've limited it right now to around guardrails, because that's where our most difficult areas to get with the mechanical equipment is.
Sure.
And we've stayed, boy, we're trying to follow the rules very religiously so we don't screw up on this thing, but we're staying plus or minus 3 feet of those guardrails, and we did apply it, and we're very pleased with the results. And it's with that herbicide. There's new kinds of herbicides out these days that are very specific to the plants that you're trying to get, and they're virtually non-toxic. The particular herbicide that we're using is actually called an aquatic herbicide. It's an herbicide that you put in to kill aquatic plants that you don't want. And it's been tested with the fish and the plants and the people and you name it. And it absorbs into the plants. You get it while the leaves are out, and you spray this stuff on the plant, and it absorbs into the root system and just knocks that thing deader than a doornail. And we've tested the ground around. We've had a tremendous number of tests to see if this stuff moves around. And within days you can virtually find no evidence of that material in the soil.
And what is it called?
The particular one that we're using is called Rodeo. It's just one of the brand
Rodeo.
Names. Rodeo. It's a Monsanto, I think, Dow chemical herbicide.
Have you trying any, is the university trying any experimental programs at University of Fairbanks? Are they doing anything?
Senator, I believe there was something going on between the university and the railroad. I'm not sure what the outcome of that was. I was aware that John Scribner had recently gone ahead with the program, and we'll be looking into what we can do with that up north.
Yeah, I just know that it creates a problem in some, a lot of our older stretches of road and things. Gone back in. The right-of-ways, for the most part, this last year look 100% better than they've looked in years and years. But, you know, there's a lot of people get hurt as a result of the right-of-ways getting up too high. And you get that brush up there, poplars or whatever, you get it up there about 4 or 5 foot, and you get a moose walking through there. You don't see them until they're, you know, basically on the highway. So we have a lot of car accidents. You know, we've had people killed and everything else in the district as a result of that.
We didn't get to all the questions, so what I would ask is if the regional directors would go through the list and respond to the ones that you feel were not answered in the hearing to us in writing. I'd appreciate that very much. Is there any other questions or anything else coming from the committee?
Just one quick thing. I do know that the governor's got an idea out there to try to get the communities, municipalities to take over maintenance of the roads. And in talking to some of the communities, the things that they have asked, most of them that I've talked to are not adverse to that. But the one thing that they would like to have, and I just wonder if you've heard the same kind of conversation, that they would like to be involved in the planning, in the construction, in the development, et cetera, of these roads, so that when, rather than DOT just coming in and say, we want you to maintain these roads, they've played a part in that whole process. Now, have you guys heard of the same kinds of comments, or they all know we don't want them?
Senator, I've, in the northern region, not heard that comment. Basically, what I have heard, from the Fairbanks North Star Borough, is they don't want them. They don't have road powers, and the citizens up there don't intend to have road powers. The city of Fairbanks has not been, they haven't said too much lately, but I know 4 or 5 years ago they were not particularly for it. Within the rest of the northern region, we don't have that many boroughs, second-class cities, and whatnot. We got a handful of them. In Fairbanks, what we have been doing, though, is working with local government on local projects and trying to get them to take more of a part in the design of the projects with the trying to hold that carrot out there that we'll upgrade this road and you take it over when we're done. But that's just in its infancy right now.
In Southeast, I haven't heard that specific comment, but we've made it clear to the communities we're willing to work with them any way that it takes to get their interest in taking over some of these roads. And to this point, there's quite a bit of interest in it, but nobody's really bit.
And in the Matsuit, they do have something like 500 miles of Class 3 roads, which I believe is the largest district that has that amount. Of course, they're really, really gun-shy on it. But, John, you mentioned the issue of not having road powers, and it's the same thing that the Matsuit Assembly says, is that they don't have road powers. They have road service districts that handle these various things. But according to the legal opinion that we get from the Attorney General and that staff has, is that they do have road powers. And to say that they don't is, and there's an argument amongst the lawyers on that, but the AG says that they definitely do. So, and don't we have that on in?
I don't know about that specifically.
Yeah, but because we've gone around and around on this particular question, and we do have a legal opinion from, and I regard in regards to who it's from, but.
Mr. Chairman, is that for the Matsuit borough in particular, or boroughs in general?
Class two boroughs.
I know that Fairbanks North Star Borough, what I've always been told by them, is that they can have road powers, but it has to be voted in, is what they tell me, and I'm not familiar with the.
Well, and that's the same thing what the Assembly says, the Matsuit Assembly says to me specifically on that issue, but according to the legal opinion that we have, and we'll dig it out, is no. The legal opinion says that they have that power. if they have that power to develop the road service districts, and there's something in the line that says that they have the power to develop transportation systems or something like that. There's a short section in there. And that section that was brought forward by this particular attorney says that they have that power. But they have been unwilling to go ahead and go out there on that, of course, because there could be implications to the taxpayers of the district or whatever. And that comes down to the bottom line on how it's going to go. And it's always been a very nervous talk to talk about transferring those road systems. One, they say they don't have the power. Two, they're in high growth areas like the Mat-Su and various other areas around the state that are putting 85% of their efforts into schools. Schools in that district, the budgets get a little tight. So somewhere in there, we have to do that tap dance to see how it comes together. But we'll dig out that opinion and get it to you.
I appreciate that. I've not seen that.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, are you sure you got that right? I mean, actually, am I hearing this right here today?
That
we have lawyers that actually have conflicting opinions.
yeah, right. Yeah. With that, we'll go ahead. Transportation hitting. We'll adjourn. It's 3:40.